She worries over her human hive. This I understand. I cup her face in my hands, crooning at her until she calms, and the deep, gasping breaths she takes slow down to more normal ones. She gives me a tremulous smile and points at it, indicating she wishes to go and see the damage herself. I can do this with her. I nod and gesture that she should lead the way. She gushes out a stream of relieved words, a brief smile returning to her face, despite the sweating of her eyes, and then grabs my hand and drags me after her, yelling for the other human female to catch up. We race along the paths, the females panting hard at the strenuous journey, their bodies sheened with sweat. My mate wants to hurry to her hive. I jog at her side, pacing my footsteps with hers. The stink of the human hive grows greater with every breath, drawing the storm clouds ever closer to my mind. I hold tight to my Gwen's hand, repeating her name over and over in my head to anchor myself. It will not be easy to enter the human hive, but I will not leave Gwen's side for a moment. Where she goes, I go. My mate chokes out a patter of words too quick for me to decipher. With her free hand, she swipes at her sweating eyes, and then gestures at the hive up ahead. The smell is overwhelming now, threaded with the scent of ash and smoke. In the distance, I can hear the movement of dozens of human feet, hear the low buzz of many voices. I do not like even one human accompanying Gwen, and now I must deal with handful after handful of them, it seems. But this is what she wants. If this is where she wishes to nest, I will not be happy, but I will endure it until it breaks my mind. My mind is shattered anyhow. More chaos on top of the existing chaos will not change much. I clutch my mate's sweaty hand in my grasp and try to focus on the world around me. Up ahead, I see gates and flimsy, honeycombed walls that stink of metal. If they are made to keep the nest safe, they are a poor defense. A memory flashes through my mind. White stone walls rising out of a reddish desert, hiding verdant green behind them. In the distance, the shimmer of the ocean, the smell of salt spray. And darkness. So much darkness and hate. I growl at the thought, because just that very flash of memory makes the storm clouds push inward. "Novan," Gwen murmurs, seizing my hand. "'S-okay." Some of the clouds vanish, but I continue to rumble low in my chest, wary. My scales prick with the sense of wrongness that teases at the back of my mind. The honeycombed, thin walls of the human hive flick back and forth with the memory of white stone, displacing over and over. The two worlds blur together, and with them, my sense of unease grows. "Stop!" a human calls out ahead, speaking a word I understand. It is a female, unmated. So many here, unmated. It makes me restless, knowing that there will be other Draconi males lurking nearby, waiting to snatch one up. This is unsafe territory, and the growl rises in my throat once more. Gwen steps forward, pulling her hand from mine. She says soft words to the females standing in front of the gate, her hands in the air. They make happy noises at the sight of her, but their gaze flicks over to me repeatedly. It is clear they do not know what to make of me. I bare my teeth at them menacingly, and one averts her eyes, her fear smell growing. She gestures at Gwen's smelly human that has been traveling with us, and then my mate steps forward again, this time with her arms in the air. One of the new females has the audacity to put a hand on her. I snarl, leaping forward. I grab the female by the throat and raise her into the air. How dare she touch my mate? Thunder blackens my thoughts, and there is nothing but rage and storms crashing through my mind, the urge to kill rising steadily. It does not matter that she is female. She will die for touching what is mine. Vaughn! A female calls out. A familiar voice. The clouds drift apart, and I turn my head, ready to snarl at the voice. It is my female, with her big brown eyes. I struggle to think of her name, hating that the storms have stolen that from me time and time again. I know who she is. I do. But as I try to focus, the female in my grip twitches, and the lightning surges in my mind. Gwen, my female says softly. Gwen. I remember. Gwen, I rumble, pleased at the sound. I like my name on her tongue. I remember another word that goes with it, the human word for mouth affection. Kiss me. Vaughn. Her tone is gentle, even as she puts a hand on my arm, lowering it. No. When I turn to look at her, she makes the hunting gesture and shakes her head again. No. No hunt? Does she wish to keep this human, too? With a disgusted sound, I drop the human in my grip, casting her aside and moving toward my Gwen. She is the only one I tolerate. I bury my claws in the thick, dark tangle of her lovely hair and rub my face against it, saturating my senses with her scent to drown out the others. Her hands lightly touch my back, and then she caresses my arms, all the while murmuring soft things to the other humans. I do not like this habit of keeping other unmated females, but I am a strong Draconi warrior. If I must fight off others looking to claim my human's pets to make my mate happy, then I shall do so.
29. Gwen. Cass rubs her bruised throat, casting hurt looks in my direction as Vaughn nuzzles at my neck, rumbling his pleasure. I'm sorry, I tell her for the 10th time as Becca pats down Mara for weapons. He's possessive. I thought when you guys made it, it was supposed to make everything better. Isn't that what Amy said? She shakes her head at me. Andrea said you left to fix him, but he's just as crazy as before. I'm not fixing anyone. It irks me that they think he's a dangerous mess. Wild, yes. Different in his thinking than we are, sure. But Vaughn doesn't need to be fixed. He needs to be loved for who he is. He's not broken.
He just tried to kill me!
Cass touches her throat again, astonished.
How can you possibly defend that?
Vaughn nips at my jaw, his hand sliding along my back. I feel a shiver of excitement at his touch, which is really, really awkward considering everyone's staring at us. So not an appropriate moment, but my body doesn't care. And my dragon doesn't seem to either. He only acted out when you touched me. He's very protective of me. I don't know where to put my hands, so I lightly place them on his shoulders and try to peer at the others from around him. He won't hurt anyone. Mara's been traveling with us for days. Ask her.
Yeah, he only tried to eat me twice,
Mara adds dryly. At my shocked look, she adds,
Kidding. Bad joke.
I like that she's coming out of her shell, but does she have to do it right now? When Cass and Becca continue to watch us warily, I give Mara a look and she speaks up again.
Seriously, I've been around him for days, and he's not dangerous. He's in love with her. Just no one bug her, and he'll be fine.
She shrugs her backpack's weight on her shoulders and looks at Cass.
I'm not familiar with this fort, but Gwen tells me we'll be safe here.
You will,
Cass says, rubbing her throat again.
You can trust her.
Well, Gwen also told me that he won't hurt anyone. And she gives Cass an innocent smile.
I imagine we should trust her on that, too.
That clever minx.
I'm starting to think I underestimated Mara. We shouldn't be standing at the gate anyhow, I add, sliding out of Vaughn's grip. I catch his hand as I pull away and tug him behind me, both to hide his nakedness and erection, and to touch him in order to keep him grounded. Not when there's a fire. The fire's mostly out, Cass says, moving to the gate and removing the padlock and chain. Just a few outbuildings smoking and a couple of plants. Plants? I echo, depressed at that. Not the corn, I hope. Sunflowers, Cass says. It hits me in the gut. Sunflower seeds are just about the only thing that keeps my birds fed. Oh. She gives me a sympathetic look and rolls the gate back. You should talk to Andrea, hun. She can catch you up with what's going on. Was anyone hurt? I ask as she lets us in. Any wounded? My sister? Everyone's okay, Cass reassures me. We're managing. But managing isn't thriving, and I feel responsible once more. I'm the mayor. It's my duty to protect everyone, and I can if I'm not here. I find Andrea squatting over the charred remains of my sunflowers, chatting in a low voice with a man in a baseball cap, both of them with their backs turned to us. Andy? Andrea jumps to her feet in surprise, her face bright red as she straightens. The person next to her straightens too, and I'm a little surprised to see it's Liam. I knew he was back in the fort, but to see him here with Andrea is startling, because I didn't think they were close. The way they crouch together, though, their shoulders are practically touching, and their posture is that of something more than friends, something less than lovers. Seeing Liam here, I can't help but compare him to Vaughn. My dragon's lean and long, where Liam seems to be all thick muscle. I think Vaughn's older and his hair is shorter, his color deeper. Vaughn's also completely naked to Liam's white t-shirt, baseball cap, and jeans. When I see Liam like this, I don't feel so silly for thinking he was human. He always wore long, concealing clothes around us and covered his head. Today the arm spikes are out, but I would still have to look twice to think he's something other than a cocky, handsome man. It's in the way he carries himself. He looks human. He doesn't have that twitchy feralness, the lurking ferocity that Vaughn does. Andrea steps forward, smoothing her fat, blonde braid. You're back, she exclaims. I could say the same for Liam, I say tartly, and then refocus. Daniela, is she okay? Is everyone okay? Dee's fine, Andrea says, sliding over a bit closer to Liam. She's resting in our room, and no one was hurt, I promise. We were just caught a little off guard. How can you be caught off guard if Liam's here? Aren't you a dragon? I shake my head at him, not understanding. I'm trying to keep the accusing tone out of my voice, but it's difficult. Can't you hear each other?
Dracony,
Liam corrects with a fanged smile.
And it's complicated to explain.
Complicated or not, I still think we deserve answers. I look over at Vaughn to see how my dragon man is reacting to the sight of the other. His gaze is locked on Liam, his brow furrowed as if he can't figure him out. I wish I knew what he was thinking. I would if we had the mental bond, but that's another problem.
He can't hear me,
Liam says, as if reading my mind. I look over at him, frowning. Liam taps on his pale gold brow.
Here. You're wondering why he can't sense me. My smell's covered in human clothing and masked by the scent of dozens of you. He can smell me now that I'm in front of him, but I've taken pains to change my scent over time. I eat what you eat so I smell like you. I use your toothpaste and your soap so I can blend.
I just stare at him, then give a slow shake of my head. This doesn't add up. But you're not like him.
Crazy?
Liam gives me another boyish smile, and Andrea fusses with the tip of her braid, averting her eyes.
I know. It was a choice I made. I came through the rift a prisoner of war, forced by Silurian overlords to remain in this form. I don't think they realized they were doing me a favor because when we arrived, everyone went mad except for me.
He glances over at Andrea.
I realized it had something to do with the psychic link our people have with each other, and closed myself off from entirely. As long as I refrain from anything that would bring out the Draconi side in myself, I can survive like this.
So you're not overtaken by the mating lust that's making the others crazy? Andrea coughs and turns away. Did I mention we lost all the sunflowers, Gwen? I don't know what you're going to want to do with your birds. I've been feeding them while you've been gone, but you're low on seed. Why are we talking about my birds right now? It seems a bizarre conversation change, and I glance over at Liam. He's watching Andrea closely, and Vaughn steps forward, nostrils flaring as he breathes in Liam's scent, inches away from the other man's face. Liam turns back to him, and for a moment, they gaze at each other.
I miss it,
Liam says after a moment, his gaze on Vaughn.
You don't know how isolating it is to be alone after you've always been connected to others of your kind. It'd be smarter for me to stay out of the forts entirely, but I need company of some kind, people to speak to. No male can do this alone.
For a moment, I swear envy crosses his face as he watches Vaughn. Then he glances over at Andrea again, and moves to her side. We were caught off guard, Andrea says. That's why the plants weren't in when we were attacked. It was off schedule and no dragon's been spotted in the area for forever, and then boom, he was right on top of us. Big male. She glances over her shoulder at me. I thought it was you guys at first. Vaughn moves toward Liam's side and plucks the baseball cap off of his head, revealing Liam's horns and short hair. My dragon man sniffs the cap and then tries to put it on his own head. It looks ridiculous with him standing there buck naked except for a hat. Ridiculous, and yet it somehow makes my heart flutter. I move forward and retrieve the cap, handing it back to Liam.
Who are you?
Andy says, her attention behind me.
Mara, don't mind me.
The filthy woman moves past us and sits down on an overturned bucket. She arranges her muddy skirts around her as if she's at a garden party.
Just absorbing everything.
Andrea shoots me a curious look.
The fort was attacked by a dragon? I prompt.
We can talk about Mara later in private, when things have settled down, because I know I'm going to have questions about Liam for her, too. It seems we both have a lot to catch up on.
Yes, so we didn't panic at first. Like I said, we thought it was you.
She shrugs and plucks at one long burned stalk, tossing it aside.
He swooped in and flamed the sunflowers, though, and we went on to red alert. Everyone started pulling in the plants and locking down the doors. You'd be proud at how quickly we responded.
If all we lost are the sunflowers, you guys did amazing, I admit.
That's the weird thing.
She looks over at me.
We should have lost more, but he did one round and then just up and left.
Up and left?
Yeah, like he heard something. Stopped mid-flame, wheeled around and just flew west. It was weird as shit. Liam thinks someone was talking to him up here.
She taps her forehead and then moves another burned stalk aside. Do you think it was Amy and Rust?
Andrea shakes her head. He flew close enough that we saw no saddle.
He had a torn-up face, lots of scars with a big tear along one nostril.
Liam says, indicating with a touch to his own face.
Old one.
That's not Rust, then. Then who called him away and why?
That's the question,
Andrea says, dusting her hands off on her jeans. We were hoping when you and Vaughn returned you might have the answers. She looks at me pointedly. From off to the side somewhere, Mara snorts.
Things are, moving slowly on that front, I manage.
No mental link yet. Vaughn's picking up some English, but like I said, it's slow. He thinks differently than we do.
Evident by the wardrobe choices,
Mara murmurs. Andrea giggles and I just shake my head. She's not wrong.
Any sign of Amy or Rast? I ask, changing tactics. It's been a few days, so they should be back soon.
Nothing, Andrea says. We've locked down the fort, and so now all there is to do is wait and see what tomorrow brings.
Sounds sensible? Sensible, but frustrating. Tomorrow, then. 30. Gwen. The loss of the sunflowers means I'll have nothing to feed my birds in the fall, and the seed I have is nearly gone. Once we finish talking to Andrea, instead of heading to my room and checking in on my sister, I head to my birds instead. Cowardly, maybe, but I know Daniela won't be happy with me for what she'll perceive as abandonment. Andrea's frustrated with me for not sealing the deal with Vaughn, when I know she would have cheerfully jumped into his arms if he'd chosen her that fateful night. I know I'm supposed to be helping the fort by sacrificing myself, but it's not quite that easy. Vaughn's struggling, too, because he needs a mate and I'm dragging my feet. Really, I'm not making anyone happy right now, and I feel it rather acutely. Time's up, and I need to make decisions and move ahead with my life, in all matters. That means making choices even when they're difficult ones. Mara left with Andy and Liam, so I'm alone with Vaughn as I head to the room that houses my birds. I smell them. Hard not to smell the acrid bird poop that pervades their room. But it's kind of comforting to me. Makes things feel like home, in an odd sense. Not because I love the poop, but because it signifies routine to me. A return to normalcy. Normalcy might be the most underrated thing in the world. I'd love a nice, mundane life. The soft cooing of my dove sounds musical in the quiet of the room. I light a candle and head into the darkness, and the birds flutter around in their cage moving toward the door. They expect food, and I don't have much to give. Vaughn looks at me curiously, waiting to see what I'm up to. I set the candle down and open the cage, reaching for the closest bird. They're so tame that they sit patiently while I touch them, stroking the soft feathers and then pulling one out and tucking him against my shirt. He's unoriginally named Petey, and he's secretly my favorite. I tried not to name them since they're supposed to be useful only, and pets are a bad call when daily life is a struggle, but his name is Petey, and he's the smartest of all of them, and the tamest. And I'm terribly, terribly attached. I stroke Petey's head and glance at Vaughn. These are my birds. I raised them ever since they were little and just barely out of the nest. I know what I have to do, and yet I'm stalling because the thought makes me heartsick. When I started taming the birds, it was just with the idea that they'd carry messages for us. The start of a possible carrier pigeon network for long-distance communication. I expected a lot of them to never come back. I expected to have to release them one day. I just didn't want it to be today. Vaughn's watching me with an odd look on his face. I hold the bird out to him, my hands carefully clasped around it to prevent Petey from flying away. You can touch him. It's all right. I know from experience that Vaughn can be amazingly gentle despite the size of his hands. He carefully takes the bird from my hands and holds it awkwardly. The dove coos with contentment, used to being handled, and Vaughn gives me another look. It's clear he doesn't quite know what to do with it and is waiting for a cue from me. When I smile encouragingly, he raises it toward his mouth and bares his fangs about to bite down on the small head. Then he looks at me. Eep. No, not a snack. I shake my head and reach out, petting Petey's tiny head. Just pet. Vaughn makes a disgruntled sound and watches me. I know, I tell him in a low voice. Pets are stupid when food's at a premium. It's just, I've lost so much already, you know? They don't judge me. I think of the disappointment in Andrea's face when she realized Vaughn and I weren't mated. I know she thinks I'm squandering the opportunity. I can't imagine what Danielle is going to tell me, but I know it's going to be full of anger and even more disappointment. Birds are easy. They love me just because I bring food, and if I let them go, I worry they won't survive because they're tame. But I can't keep them. I don't have the supplies. In a way, the birds remind me of the people at Fort Shreveport. Didn't we set off from Fort Tulsa declaring that we'd make our own fort and be safe? Didn't I promise everyone that we could do this on our own? Look at how terrible I've been at leadership. Vaughn moves to put the bird back in the cage, and I open the door for him. He releases it back inside, and I move to close the cage. And then think better of it and leave the door wide open. I move to one of the metal-covered windows and pry the shutters open. Cool night air wafts in, and I glance back to the cage. The birds just flutter their wings and settle down. They'll probably sit there waiting for a handout until they starve. I sigh. Even when I try to do the right thing, I'm thwarted. Vaughn grabs me and pulls me against his chest, tucking my head under his chin and stroking my hair. For a brief moment, I feel like crying. I cling to him, full of frustration and despair. I know they're just birds, I do. They're symbolic of my good intentions and how fucked up they are, though. And I can't help but think about that over and over again. I let Vaughn hold me and pet my hair because I've come to really love these impulsive, strange caresses. It's like he knows just when I need to be touched, and it always makes me feel better. Thank you, I murmur to him and rest my cheek against his shoulder. I don't deserve you. He just caresses my back as I stare at the birds in the cage, waiting for something that'll never come.
Vaughn. My Gwen's eyes do not sweat, but I can still sense her unhappiness. Her movements are defeated, even though we are in the hive of her humans, just as she wanted. The tidbits of food she keeps caged she does not eat, and indicates that I should not eat them either. Her thoughts are as much of a mystery as always, but it is clear she is displeased about something. I try to connect my thoughts with hers, but as always, there is nothing. I bite back my growl of frustration. I can be patient for a bit longer. I can. I push back against the storm clouds that hover at the edge of consciousness. Now is not the time. Gwen pulls away and smiles up at me. She takes my hand and leads me out of the foul-smelling bird room and farther into the hive, the tiny stick of flame in her free hand. We pass a few people who stare at me, some females with young carried in their arms, but no mating scent in their blood. Odd. Perhaps the young in their arms are orphans, and the parents have been killed or enslaved. I do not scent many males here, mostly females. None of them smell half as pleasant as my mate. Her scent is like sweetness itself. The others make my nose twitch, and I have to fight the urge to shift forms and chase them off. Only the knowledge that my Gwen would not want that stops me. We pass down a long, dark hallway, and then pause at a door. Different smells assault my senses, but I catch a whiff of Gwen's scent here, faded. Was this her nest before? She snuffs out the tiny flame in her free hand and sets it down on a table outside the door, then gestures for quiet, her finger touching her lips. I cannot resist touching her. I put my finger on her lips, and her eyes are luminous as she looks up at me. The faint scent of her arousal threads through the overwhelming chaos of other scents, and as I gaze down at her, I wonder if she brings me to her nest so we can mate. Finally. Pleased, I pull her against me and lock an arm around her waist. I feel the urge to rub my hard cock against her soft belly and show her just how much I want her, but I don't. I know she starts with mouth matings, so I cup her chin with my claws and tilt her face up to mine. Kiss me. She looks torn, then after a moment, bites her lip.
Not tonight, not here, she whispers, glancing around. My sister's inside.
So much babbling of human words. Is she telling me to be gentle with her when I push into her?
I will go slow, I promise. I will wait until your cunt is hot with nectar before I take you. This I promise. You will enjoy it. Gwen gives me a little smile, pats me on the chest, and then opens the door to her nest. It is a large, cave-like room, and across the way, someone sits up in a nest. Another female, with dark skin similar to Gwen's, and an unmated scent.
Gwen?
The female murmurs, and then turns on a small fire beside her bed. The female's gaze moves to me, and she gasps, staring at my two-legged form.
He's naked! What the fuck?
"'S okay, Gwen says, leaving me behind and crossing toward the other female. She makes the sniffling sound that indicates her eyes are about to start sweating.
Daniela, missed you.
My mate spreads her arms wide and tries to embrace the other female, only to get pushed away as she leans in.
Don't want to talk to you,
the other says, looking over at me suspiciously.
Who's he?
I bare my fangs at this new female. My Gwen certainly collects them, it seems. They crop up everywhere every time we try to be alone.
Isvan,
Gwen says, glancing over at me.
Said dragon. Denise the enemy,
the other declares, lifting her chin.
This why you left me? This is wrong.
She grabs her coverings and pulls them close to her body, getting out of her nest with great indignation as she begins to babble angry words at my mate far too fast for me to follow. I study the new female, wondering at what angers her so much. Her scent is similar to Gwen's, but not nearly as appealing. When she looks over at me, her eyes are full of anger, and I notice that her cheeks are not smooth like Gwen's, but have great ugly symbols carved on them. She's smaller than Gwen, and in my eyes, less pleasant to look upon and smell. And she is very, very angry at the sight of me. Her gaze moves over my body, from my horns to my cock, and then back up again.
And he's got a boner, she declares, gesturing at me. You guys are sick!
My Gwen wrings her hands, and sweat pours from her eyes. She tries to speak to the other female in gentle words, but it is clear the other does not want to hear them. She shakes her head and snaps at my mate, and when Gwen reaches for her, she shrugs her off and storms for the door. I step in front of it, growling and baring my fangs at the female trying to leave. She cannot go until Gwen says she can. The female gasps and staggers backward, her fear scent blooming. She lets out a tiny, choked scream of terror. Gwen rushes to her feet.
No, no!
She says, over and over again. She moves toward me, her hands on my arms, touching my shoulder, my face.
It's okay, Vaughn. It's okay.
The other female looks at my mate with utter frustration.
You're supposed to comfort me!
With another angry snarl, she pushes past Gwen and myself and retreats into the halls of the nest. Gwen sighs, watching her go, and more sweat streams down her cheeks.
Daniela,
she whispers, then buries her face against my chest, her arms going around me. My displeasure at her sadness wars with the joy I feel that she chooses me over the other. She protected me when the other female approached, which was not necessary, but flattering. She stays with me in my arms when the other leaves. Even I know a jealous female when I see one, and the one with the scars on her face is jealous. I stroke my Gwen's hair smugly, make comforting rumbling sounds in my chest, and wait for her to stop sweating, to compose herself. We are alone now, though, and this pleases me even more. It is the first time in many days that we have not been surrounded by one strange female or another. I caress Gwen's shoulder, lightly running my claws up and down her delicate neck and into her thick, fragrant hair. Gwen, I rumble, letting her know I am ready to mate. This is our chance, our time. She looks up at me with sad, sad eyes, and whispers a flutter of words that mean nothing to me, except that my mate is hurting. The other female's retreat has wounded her spirit. My own need dissipates like smoke. This is not a mating time after all. My mate needs comfort, and she has turned to me. I pull her toward the nest that retains her old scent, and then ease her down onto the coverings. She curls up against me, her breath shuddering, and I hold her close. Mating can wait. Again. Gwen needs me.
31. Gwen. Daniela's disapproval shouldn't hurt as much as it does. I know she's mad. I know she has every right to be mad. I expected it, but in the face of her anger, it's hard to remain calm. For the last 7 years, all we've had is each other. She's struggling with her recovery from a traumatic ordeal. I should have been there for her. And in her eyes, I'm frolicking with a naked dragon man who should be the enemy. She feels betrayed on all fronts. I should go after her, explain, apologize 1,000 times and hope that just one sinks in. I don't, though, because it's hard and I'm not strong enough to handle her anger and vitriol and not come out completely shattered. Daniela wanted me to do more to save her. Maybe I could have. And the thought eats and eats at me. Make a decision, Gwen, I chide myself. It should be so easy. Just come in swinging like Amy does. Tackle problems head first and don't take no for an answer. But there's a determined core inside Amy that I'm not sure I have. All my past choices have paralyzed me. So I end up making no choice at all. I must be more physically and emotionally exhausted from my journey than I thought, because I fall asleep instead of going after Daniela. A sound wakes me from a deep sleep, and I realize I'm curled up against Vaughn's scorchingly hot stomach, and my skin feels sensitive where I've been pressed against him. My arms thrown over his hips, and even though he's naked, and erect, always erect, I'm not fazed by it. I'm also drooling a little in what could probably be the world's least dainty nap. I lift my head and glance over at the door, wiping my wet mouth even as Vaughn puts his hand in my hair, rubbing my head. Just as I swipe at my lips and sit up, Andrea peeks in through the door. She takes one look at me and her face flames bright red. Oh my God, I'm so sorry, she exclaims, stricken. I didn't realize I was interrupting. I'll tell everyone you're not to be bothered. Wait, I call out even as she shuts the door. We're not. I sigh because it's useless. She's not going to believe me anyhow. She saw me wiping my mouth as I loomed over Vaughn's crotch with his hand on the back of my head. Of course she's going to think we're busy.
Gwen?
Vaughn rumbles, a question in his smooth voice. Oh, no big deal, I tell him, curling back up against his side. Everyone's going to think I'm blowing you, that's all. He gives me one of those low growls that doesn't mean he's angry at all, just content, and looks up at me with sleepy eyes whirling with deep gold. My hands on his stomach and my toes curl at that possessive, pleased look on his face. I glance down at his cock, and sure enough, he's straining and hard, his skin flushed a deeper gold. Of course Andrea thinks I'm blowing him. I lick my lips again, and suddenly sleep is the furthest thing from my mind. I wonder how he'd react if I touched him. So far, it's been all about me and less about him, and I want to return the favor. More than that, I just want to make him come, to see the look on his gorgeous, wild face when he climaxes. Maybe that's selfish of me, but I'm past caring. How many times has he given me comfort and asked for nothing in return other than my company? I don't want things to be one-sided between us. I want him to realize how much I want him too. It's time for me to show it. I slide my hand up and down his stomach, just enjoying the feel of his skin under my palm. Touching him is ridiculously pleasurable,
because he's heated and hard with muscle, and not scaly in the slightest. Vaughn groans, his eyes turning an even deeper shade of gold at my caress. His claws dig against my scalp, not hard, but just enough to send a shiver of excitement through my body. I glance down at his hard shaft, and there are beads of pre-cum on the head, and my own arousal kicks up a notch. God help me, but I don't think I've ever wanted to touch anyone as much as I want to touch you. My whisper feels loud in the silence of the room, the only sound's that of our breathing. I lean over him to put my mouth on his cock, but he stops me.
No, Gwen.
Shock and hurt roll through me. I sit back, staring at him in surprise. No? Don't you want me? His touch is almost frantic as he traces my jaw, and then takes my hand in his. Guiding my fingertips, he brushes one over a pearly bead of pre-cum. It's like touching boiling water. I draw back with a gasp, surprised. I remember now. When he came before and I cleaned him with a towel, I was surprised at how hot his fluids were. They're scorching right now. I don't understand how this works, Vaughn. How are we supposed to have sex? Amy didn't mention the heat part, or if she did, I missed it. But he's not concerned, and Amy wasn't either. Nor was she walking bow-legged, so I assume it all turns out all right in the end. All she mentioned was a bite and him giving me his fires. I just didn't think it was literal. It doesn't stop me from wanting to touch him, though. I'm starting to become addicted to Vaughn, like an addict craving a fix. Just one more touch, one more kiss, one more caress. I want to test his boundaries and my own. So I reach for his cock, mindful of the wet beads building on the head and grip the base of him. His lips part, showing a hint of fang, and his eyes close in ecstasy. That's what I'm talking about, I murmur, fascinated by his response. Lord, this man is sexy. I watch as his entire body tenses and he pushes up against my hand, trying to thrust into my grip. I squeeze tighter, then make a circle with my fingers and try to move it up and down. My hands aren't slippery enough to get good movement, though, and I give up caressing his sack instead. He feels super heated here, too, the skin thinner and more delicate, and it's fascinating to see the scaled pattern. Even this part of him is beautiful. I let my fingers dance along his cock, avoiding the head of it even though I'm dying to touch him there. Instead, I trace over his length, learning him with my fingertips. The scales are closer together, the color deeper here on this part of him, and I notice they form a ridge along the top of his cock that makes me shiver. How did I never notice that before? And holy shit, how is that going to feel? No, I'm the one moaning, imagining him thrusting into me and that thick ridge dragging back and forth inside me. No wonder Amy's such a happy girl, hmm? I haven't seen Rast naked, but if he's anything like my Vaughn, and I just thought of him as mine, warmth flushes through me. I glance down at the man sprawled on my bed. He's alien-looking, a little feral, but there's no doubt in my mind that he's mine. Not anymore. And I want to make him come like he did for me. I grip the base of his cock tightly again and stroke him. I'm acutely aware of my calluses, though, and how much softer my hands could be. It gives me an idea, and I climb over him to my bedside nightstand, pilfered from a nearby house, and dig through until I find one of the lotion bars that Cass makes for all the girls. It's not quite the same as lotion from the before, but it's lightly scented, and more important than anything, it gets my hands nice and slick when I rub it between them.
Gwen,
Vaughn rasps, reaching for me. He rubs his knuckles along my thigh, returning my attention to him.
Kiss me.
There are all kinds of kisses, Vaughn, I tell him. I pull off my t-shirt and use it to swipe the pre-cum off of the head of his cock, and then press a kiss there. He's hot to the touch, but not so hot that I burn myself. The breath hisses between his teeth. A pleased rumble, almost like a purr, vibrates in his chest. and when more precum appears to take the place of the last, he swipes it away almost angrily, and then looks to me again. Laughing, I lean down and kiss the head of his cock once more, and then glide my slippery hands up and down his shaft. Vaughn makes a sharp noise in his throat, half snarl, half choke. He rises up from the blanket, staring at me with a dazed expression. A moment later, he falls back again, takes my hand, and puts it on his cock once more. With his other hand, he swipes away more pre-cum and growls my name again. Who knew that teasing him would be so much fun? I run my hands up and down his length, getting him extra slick from cock head to balls. And then I begin to work him, encircling him with one hand and working him while teasing his sack with my other hand. And I say all kinds of filthy, raunchy things to him, because he can't understand a word I'm saying. It's all in my tone, and his eyes are molten pools of gold, watching me as I work him with quick, tight motions of my hands. It seems like I've barely gotten started when he grits out my name once more, and then bats my hands away. He takes his cock, strokes it twice, and then rolls away as he comes, spurting all over my sheets and bedding. I'm not even mad. Rather, I'm quite proud of myself. I made him lose control and come quick and hard. I wipe my slick hands off on another corner of the blanket as he collapses onto his back, utterly spent. He's beautiful like this, and my breath catches in my throat. I move closer, leaning over him. Let's make tonight the night, Vaughn. My pulse is pounding and my pussy aches with need. No more holding back. No. The door opens. Daniela steps inside and gives me an angry glare, holding her chin high as she heads to her bunk. It's clear that Vaughn and I were in the middle of something, and it's also clear she doesn't care. She crawls into her bed, turns her back to us, and the room is silent once more. Vaughn caresses my cheek, and I press a quiet kiss into his palm, but that's it. There's no way I'm having kinky dragon sex with my traumatized sister in the room. It's just gonna have to wait another night. Damn it. I get up to steal Andrea's blankets and then return to bunk down with Vaughn. Tomorrow, we find someplace private to room, I decide. No sharing with two other people. That's just not going to work. Tomorrow suddenly seems very far away.
32. Vaughn. The next morning, my Gwen shows no sign that she wishes to leave the human hive yet. She covers her lovely brown body in the strange human fabrics and puts on foot covers. She finds a long piece of fabric and offers it to me, a little grimace of apology on her lips. She wants me to wear coverings as well? I frown at this, but the other female in the nest with us, the one with the scars on her cheeks, makes distressed noises whenever she looks at me. I think back to yesterday, and the other males, even the Draconi with the dead mind, covered their bodies. Bah! I hold still, and Gwen wraps it around my hips, knotting it at my waist. It's a kilt, she says cheerfully, and then gives me a smacking kiss in apology. It's a skirt, the other female grumbles. Gwen ignores her foul mood. She hugs the female, despite the fact that the other one does not touch her back, and gives her a kiss on the forehead. Then my mate takes my hand, squeezes it, and leads me out of the room, calling something cheery to her human. She is still in a good mood this morning, my Gwen, and I like that. I enjoy her happiness. It makes my mood lighter as well. Until we join the other humans in the hive in a large chamber. All of the humans and their stinking, pungent bodies seem to be piled into one room together. Aghast at the stench, I stare in horror as they line up and take round objects in their hands, and then move to sit down at a long wooden rectangle, staring at each other and yapping in their noisy human language. My senses are appalled and overwhelmed.
Like always, the storms begin to thunder inside my mind, a reminder that I can quickly lose control here.
Vaughn?
Gwen's gentle voice cuts through the chaos, and she squeezes my hand. I squeeze hers back. As long as she touches me, I can endure this.
"'Sbreakfast,' she says, making an eating gesture.
I look over, and she is right. The humans are eating, and I remember Gwen and the other smelly human that traveled with us doing the same around the fire. They do not kill their food and eat the good bones. They like broths and soups and drinking their meals from rounded containers, as they do this morning. I fight back a shudder as I remember how deeply charred Gwen likes her meals. Food, I tell her, remembering the human word. She's pleased at my response.
Yes, food.
People stare as we walk in, and Gwen grips my hand so tightly that I suspect she worries I will lose control. Her bright smile is more forced, and I squeeze her hand again to reassure her. She pulls me along beside her and stands behind people waiting for their food. When I am handed a bowl of pale sludge, I fight back my distaste. Gwen looks happy. She is all that matters. My mate gets her own bowl and then leads me across the room to one of the tables. Everywhere I look, there are humans staring at us, and all of them wear more coverings than I do. Gwen calls out to some of them, but her hand remains tight in mine, and she casts anxious looks in my direction over and over again. The stench in here of all these human scents bleeding into each other is overpowering. I move closer to her and inhale deeply of her scent, nuzzling at her hair.
"Sit down," she says,
putting her bowl on the table and then seating herself on the bench in front of it. I do the same, and when she releases my hand, I possessively put mine on her thigh and look around. There are two others who hover nearby with their food, and I bare my teeth in a snarl at them until they get up and leave. My mate just sighs.
"Eat, Vaughn."
She makes the gesture for food, and my lip curls as I glance down at the colorless pile in my bowl. I try to pick it up with my claws, but it slides through in clumps like clotted blood from meat that has gone bad.
That does not make me hungry.
"Poon,"
Gwen tells me, patting my thigh and then handing me a shiny silver stick with a fat end.
"Use this."
She picks hers up and uses it to scoop the food into her mouth.
A vague memory stirs. She has done this before.
I glance around the large, noisy room, seeking a particular scent. There, in the back of the room, is Gwen's smelly human. I remember her sitting with my mate, and both of them using these things to eat. Her gaze meets mine, and she scrambles to her feet, clutching her bowl and leaving the room. The sight of her retreating sets off the storms in my mind. Prey retreats. She is prey. I get to my feet, fire churning in my belly. My mouth waters, and my claws itch with the need to rend, to tear and destroy. Fresh, hot blood is what I need. A hand grips my arm.
"No, Vaughn."
I glance down, and it takes me a moment to focus on the female at my side.
Gwen. I sit down, my thoughts filling with memories of her slippery hands gliding up and down my shaft, and the way she leaned in and kissed my cock head. I want to do that again.
"Kiss me,"
I tell her, tangling my hand in her hair and pulling her close. I do not need the smelly one, not when my beautiful mate, with her enticing hands, is at my side. But Gwen only gives me a quick, smacking kiss, and then shows me the silver poon again. I sigh and pick it up, mollified at the happy, approving look she gives me. I manage to grip it, even though it is difficult with claws, and lift a mouthful of sludge to my lips. Hesitant, I flick the tip of my tongue against it, tasting. It is oddly sweet, like rotted meat. I put the poon down again and push the bowl toward my mate. Gwen, I indicate the food. She can have it.
No?
She asks between bites and rests her hand on my thigh, giving it a light squeeze. I am not hungry enough to eat that. I can hunt later. I caress her arm and rub her back as she eats, filling my senses with her nearness instead. After a time, the nearness of the humans becomes like the buzzing, irritating drone of desert flies and makes me itchy and impatient. I twitch in my seat and study the nearest humans with a scowl on my face. Even from here, their stink is oppressive. Some do not smell bad. My Gwen smells perfect. But their scent is strong. In the heat and in close quarters, without a breeze to stir the air, it becomes overpowering. Combined with the endless yapping of voices, and the storms begin to cloud over in my mind once more. I start to growl low in my chest, my protective side rising. If one so much as approaches her... Gwen gets to her feet and clunks the two bowls together, then grabs me by the hand.
Time to go.
I stand slowly, overwhelmed by the sounds and scents. It is rapidly becoming too much. I send out my thoughts, looking for an anchor to mentally latch onto. Gwen's thoughts are hidden from me. The other Draconi male in the hive is a giant void of nothingness, and when I reach out, there is nothing. Always nothing. I growl, frustrated and heartsick.
Vaughn,
Gwen says, and her hands are on my arms, touching me. She takes me by the hand and leads me forward a step. I follow her, my movements halting as my senses drown with the plague of smells, of endless noise.
With me,
she says, voice soothing, and touches my chin to make sure that I look at her. Her brown eyes are warm and soft and welcoming.
Stay with me.
Gwen. I follow her movements, my focus entirely on her. One foot in front of the other. My skin itches, jumping with the need to shift to battle form, to intimidate the humans clustered around, making noises as they eat, noises as they breathe, noises as they laugh. So much noise.
Vaughn,
Gwen cajoles again, and there's a husky note in her voice that entices my fractured mind. Her smile curves slightly and hints at secret touches in her nest. Perhaps that is where she leads me now. I like that thought. I pull her body against mine and hold her close. Gwen. She takes me out of the room, and the scents, the sounds, all fall away. In my mind, there is only my mate with her dancing brown eyes and the curve of her full lips. The brush of her thick, curling hair against her shoulders catches my focus, and I watch her intently, waiting for her to show me that if she will not challenge me, she wants my challenge instead. But when we enter the maze of warrens that make up the human hive, she does not go to her nest. Instead, she returns to the room with the birds that we are not allowed to eat. She sounds distressed as she notices two of them in the cage, despite the fact that the door is open and has been open all night. Gwen glances over at me and talks softly, dozens of words spilling from her lips. I know she speaks to herself when she is agitated, and I have learned she does not do it to annoy me, but simply because she needs to talk to her thoughts. So I ignore it, sitting down nearby while she fusses over them and sprinkles seed inside the cage, babbling to herself. I move to the open window, noticing a pool of sunshine, and sit there to enjoy its warmth and breathe in the fresh air. A mind touches mine. I sit upright, stiffening with surprise. It has been a long, long time since I have felt any sort of